Hello, welcome to the New Stack Makers, a podcast where we talk about at-scale application development, deployment, and management. I'm Alex Williams, founder and editor-in-chief here at the New Stack. This episode is a part of our upcoming ebook, CI/CD with Kubernetes. I had the pleasure of being joined by CNCF Cloud Native Ambassador Chris Short and CNCF Developer Advocate Ior Dietsky at KubeCon plus Cloud Native Con earlier this month in Copenhagen, Denmark. Before we begin, I'd just like to say a huge thank you to KubeCon plus Cloud Native Con, our sponsor for the ebook and podcast. KubeCon plus Cloud Native Con conferences gather adopters and technologists to further the education and advancement of cloud native computing. The vendor-neutral event featured domain experts and key maintainers behind popular projects like Kubernetes, Prometheus, gRPC, Envoy, OpenTracing, and more. KubeCon plus Cloud Native Con is a conference series under the Cloud Native Computing Foundation, a project of the Linux Foundation. Now, on to the show. Hey, it's Alex Williams of the New Stack. Joining me today are Chris Short. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Doing good. How you doing?
Good. And the famous Ior of the CNCF. Ior, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. I'm here to talk about CI/CD and Kubernetes. And I was just chatting with you guys about what is this shift that we're seeing? What is this that is apparent with Kubernetes that it's forcing enterprises to think through? And I hear one thing is this technical gap, right? This technical understanding is there, but it's just totally different, right? In a continuous integration environment, you used to describe the artifact and then load it up. Essentially, Chris, isn't that right?
Yeah, the trend that I'm seeing is there's a lot of, not necessarily misunderstanding, but kind of this, okay, you know, kind of nebulous thing that you're trying to codify now. Of, you know, you're going from this pipeline of, you know, the build server builds your artifact, your delivery pipeline grabs this artifact and then deploys it somewhere. Well, now it's, you know, you're grabbing a container or you're grabbing a configuration that, you know, calls on all these other things like a Kubernetes deployment to pull in all these disparate pieces and then off it goes. It's kind of a shift, right? You're going from nothing to like a fully running application, essentially, where before it used to be you had to put in a ticket with infrastructure to get some VMs. You had to put a ticket with, you know, networking to get all this load balancing and VLANs and everything else configured. Now it's just your boxes are ready to go, right? If they're running, you know, a Kubernetes distribution of some sort, they're already set up. They can talk to the world. All you have to do is plug in, you know, your deployment and check in your code, and then off you go. The hard part is that mind shift of, okay, now we have to say, okay, we care about, you know, networking as an operations team and as a development team. Now we have to do these things like load balancing, all these other bits and pieces that we never really considered or had expertise in. So how do they pull in all these different pieces into one functional group and then send it off?
Right. So that's the shift. Everything's ready to go. All you have to do is just basically kind of build out the platform to make it go, don't you? I mean, that's the problem, right? That's the issue is like, what is this new system that you build? How are you seeing this from a community perspective and like helping companies adapt and change as social constructs to be able to think from a contextual point of view about how you kind of think of this socially and how you think about enabling and making this process work?
From the general ecosystem perspective, we have to move back to the early ages of DevOps and the pre-DevOps days and the pre-container days when they had to maintain to deploy almost everything manually. And switching to the different paradigm with the early and first CI/CD systems with the monolith applications was a big move, a big step forward from the previous experience when again the operators had to deploy everything manually and the general operations patterns were completely manual. So today with the containerized technologies and with the cloud native technologies, we can see how the general market of the CI/CD systems, the CI/CD systems and DevOps tools and DevOps related tools is totally different. So as Chris mentioned, today you simply some container. You can build locally, you can build it remotely, you can build some configuration and simply to the different direction. You can simply transfer some predefined configuration that can be built in some different place. So it's the big shift. And within the ecosystem, we can notice how many new projects have been born during the last few years that satisfy the today's operate DevOps engineers' expectations that are strongly designed to work with the containers, to work with the containerized technologies, to work with the cloud technologies. And they are totally different from the previously born technologies like 10 or 15 years ago.
The changes then that these companies are making internally, both, you know, trying to develop that DevOps mindset, where do you see that intersection, Chris, with customers? And what are the kind of the technical challenges they're trying to tackle first? And what do you recommend?
So a lot of the technical challenges are kind of easily solved nowadays. It, you know, 5 years ago, it was hard to overcome some of the technical challenges. But now, because of things like Kubernetes and, you know, a wide and growing field of CI and CD tools, it's more of, you know, narrowing down what works best for you to solve your problems as opposed to the actual process of change. The harder part, I think, is like the cultural shift that's required with it, in the sense of, we're not going to wait around on tickets to get done. We're not going to wait around on, you know, someone else to finish this thing. It's literally everybody's moving as fast as they can towards pushing something out into production. You know, one of the clients I'm working with at the moment is trying very hard to push a full on Elk Stack out into production today. You know, I mean, they've had some pieces and parts and put in place, but the idea of doing that, you know, a matter of one sprint would have been a completely foreign concept 3, 4, 5 years ago. Now you can do it in 2 weeks. So easily do it in 2 weeks.
Right. I'd also second the cultural shift. And also, for example, comparing the, again, I'm coming back to history again. So you can probably remember, if you've been using some operating systems, some desktop software, 10, 15, or 20 years ago, do you remember how often have you received the updates to your software? For example, if you've been using, I don't know, Windows 95, how often have you received the updates to your operating system? Today, we are all using the mobile operating systems, for example, and we're all using the web applications. And today, we are not receiving updates of the software technologies once per year or once in a few months, but we can receive a few updates in a single day. So that significantly changes the culture of development, the culture of operating these environments. And that is actually one of the major areas where typical operations and development became DevOps.
So there's this thinking, you know, that there's this initial challenge with containers, right? They've historically affected organizations and how they kind of think about translating, you know, their current development solutions into Dockerized development solutions, right? And we saw that emerge. We saw that people have started to understand that better. And now we're starting to see, I would say, more sophisticated look. And we're starting to see that adoption spread, right, in organizations. We're starting to see more, you know, DevOps. So it seems like the social issue is a big one. But now it also seems like there's this gap in the technologies themselves, where there's been a long reliance and continuous integration using, you know, platforms and technologies like Jenkins. But now in this new world of Kubernetes and CI/CD, we're looking at a lot more raw data that's available, and we're seeing the use of graph databases like Prometheus to help kind of provide some better monitoring and observability. What are the gaps that you're seeing in the tool sets now that are going to be important to be addressed as continual integration, continuous delivery spreads more to the mainstream, you know, IT organization?
I can notice one. I'm not speaking right now about the technology gaps, but the community and the gap from the open source world, our perspective. Speaking about the cloud native world and about the projects, today we have almost every project for every single purpose that you may have in the container world. Unfortunately, we don't have any CI/CD specific projects in this ecosystem. And that moves the consumers, the operators, and the companies that would like to use these technologies to select some proprietary or semi-proprietary technologies, probably to use some open source technologies. But nobody from the open source world can guarantee that they will satisfy their desire in the real cloud native compatibility. So that is the, I would say that's the market, like the open source market gap.
Okay. Chris?
Yeah, the hardest thing is gluing all the pieces together. And I think CNCF is doing a good job of finding projects that, you know, can work very well together, adding them to the CNCF landscape, bringing them into the sandbox and saying, you know, these things should work together with each other very well in their specific functions. But, you know, you mentioned Prometheus. As far as, you know, you could feed anything into Prometheus, right? I've seen people use Prometheus to feed in like AWS billing data and correlate that with, you know, their usage, traffic, and, you know, other metrics to get their business logic out of Prometheus faster. But, you know, they understand what their business needs, what metrics are very important to them and their applications. And, you know, to do that out of the box, that's pretty hard, right? Like there is a knowledge gap that exists as far as, you know, going from, you know, the traditional, you mentioned Jenkins kind of, you know, deployment model. You know, I mentioned, you know, deploying like Java apps, for example, to this new world of, you know, whether you're running a cloud inside your own data center or a cloud, you know, with a provider of some sort and taking all that data and actually correlating it with all these different business metrics. You know, there's a greater understanding of what your business is, you know, considering key metrics or, you know, some people call it like true north. And bringing that into, you know, the operations and development world more closely makes for a more challenging kind of job for, you know, the typical people that for years are like, I do the Linux or I do the network, you know.
Right. They just had a different kind of thought process, right?
Right. Yeah.
So now here we are and we're, what are some of the things like if we talk about that glue of binding everything together to make it loosely coupled to some extent, what's the complexity that they're facing in binding these different components in this microservices kind of context?
So the hard part for a lot of people is that they've had these huge, you know, support contracts with one company that, you know, for lack of a better term, was some kind of value-added reseller or, you know, a big service provider. And, you know, that company did all the gluing together for them. But now it's very much they have to get down and understand, you know, how to communicate with different APIs. You know, the different tooling that is required, you know, is no longer, oh, I have to have this thick client installed to interface with this huge application that does all of our orchestration for us. Now it's you just need curl or, you know, Postman or whatever kind of, you know, API integration tool you want to use to just test things out and say, you know, when this event occurs, push it this way. When this this change comes into the infrastructure, do this. It's very, very much a, you know, you need to think more holistically about your systems and, you know, getting that deep understanding of what you're working with. That is kind of the biggest challenge. So the glue is very much a simple kind of, you know, this API needs to send this data to this API when this event kind of happens to how do we move from, you know, a Jenkins to some kind of different CI/CD tool
right.
that can better manage these cloud native primitives simpler and more effectively. And that's where I think things like, you know, Kubernetes is great at helping you make things live in production. But there needs to be that understanding on the back end to come in and say, you can't just take your old tooling and expect it to work the same way.
So, ER, that must be leading to a lot of new tools that you're seeing emerge, isn't it? To help
right.
with
yeah.
this process?
Exactly. Exactly. The market is growing and the landscape of the open source tools related to CI/CD, CI/CD systems is extremely growing during the last few years.
What are specifically some of these tools trying to solve that help kind of, you know, solve this problem that Chris is talking about where you might have previously had been working with one, you know, organization, maybe it's a consulting group or a systems integrator who is doing this for you and now you're responsible for it yourself. What are the tools that you're seeing them need? It seems one thing we're hearing is there's a lot more need for tools that have better observability.
I would say that all these tools today have two major requirements. First of all, they have to work natively with version control systems, especially with Git. Almost every organization is using Git in some different way. GitHub, for example, for some open source projects, or GitLab for the private projects. But I would say that more than 90% source control systems today on the market are related to Git, and all these systems have to work with it native. Another challenge, as Chris mentioned, is about the native compatibility with the containerized technologies, and especially with Kubernetes. So again, to be Kubernetes as highly dominating technology in the container world. It could be even more dominating in terms of the share, comparing even to Docker, because Docker is usually being used as simply the daemon and the container runtime, while Kubernetes is much bigger. Kubernetes is not only the technology, not only the project, it's the huge ecosystem itself. So I would say that these are two major areas where these technologies have to be native enough and have to work in a desired way if they would like to be successful today.
Chris, you see any other requirements that are critical? Making it native with Git seems critical, and almost every organization is using Git in some way. Any other thoughts on what's going to be needed?
So I think the biggest thing is that whatever you're deciding to use for kind of your cloud infrastructure, whether it be an AWS, Google Cloud, Pivotal, like the tooling has to work with that very well. You're not going to take something that's, you know, designed specifically, and not many people are making tools designed specifically for, you know, one cloud provider, and they're trying to shoehorn them in with another. They're going to look to, can you work with Git, GitHub, GitLab? Can you work with AWS? And can we push our tooling and, you know, infrastructure changes out through these disparate tools? They're not going to say, oh, we have these favorite darlings anymore. They're going to say, these are our requirements specifically based off the choices they've made. And if it doesn't support that, it's not even going to get looked at, which is, you know, I think a big shift than when I first got started in IT, because it was, if it didn't come from HP or Microsoft or Dell, it didn't even get looked at. Whatever organization your company decided to pair up with, it was, that was it. That was the Holy Grail. And now you can do anything you want so long as it just works with the choices you've made in the past.
So what are you seeing as popular? What are some of the use cases you're starting to see emerge, Chris?
And I see a lot of people that are, you know, trying to move from, you know, just 100% on-prem into more of a hybrid kind of environment or a cloud environment that's on-prem. I see a lot of people latching on to GitLab CI. I'm seeing a lot of people latching on to more lightweight CI tools. And the idea of the CI pipeline having like some overarching team that admins it is gone, right? Like everybody's contributing equally to improving that pipeline and delivery platform so that it enhances services to users. And those users are often, you know, paying customers in that case. The tooling that's emerging is, you know, from the on-prem side, it's a lot of, you know, stuff that you can run, you know, in your infrastructure as is. From the cloud side, it's so expansive now. And you're seeing a lot of tools like Spinnaker and, you know, other things coming out of companies getting open sourced and then pushed into either CNCF or, you know, some other, you know, open source form of some sort to get kind of an adoption that, you know, the community then forms around and then improves those products respectively. So it's an interesting world to live in now with everything just kind of saying, okay, we can develop this internally, but what if we open source it? That'll make it better.
Spinnaker is one of the best examples of the similar sorts when the single company is using some technology internally, but they are open sourcing it and it becomes available to everyone in the market. And today, Spinnaker, X closed source technology by the single company, is one of the most popular technologies in the CI/CD world today.
Yeah, we write a lot about Spinnaker in this in the book. One of the criticisms I hear about Spinnaker, though, is that it was built in a different context, right? And it doesn't fit exactly into the architecture that represents Kubernetes. And it's, as I understand, more of like it's more of like individual identity versus kind of the identity of the node and everything else. Is that correct? Is there a difference in the architecture for Spinnaker that's forcing it to be adapted to Kubernetes?
I think they're both adapting together, right? Like the sea change that's happening. And, you know, Spinnaker was, you know, developed internally for a very specific use case and has grown, you know, internally before it was open sourced. And now that it's out in the wild, like the tooling is growing up rapidly, I would even say, about Spinnaker. The idea that, you know, something that stays as a static, you know, entity and it was designed for this one.
Right.
It's just fading away very quickly, especially with Spinnaker. The idea of, you know, oh yeah, it was used for Netflix and AWS deploys and so forth. So no, it's used everywhere. Like Google latched onto it very quickly and, you know, decided to say, you know, this is a very good tool. We recommend it. Mm-hmm. But then to take it a step further, you know, we're working to integrate it with Kubernetes better. The Spinnaker, you know, open sourcing of it allows for that thing to happen, the change to happen. The Kubernetes tooling, you know, it's going in its direction. Spinnaker is going in its direction, but they meet somewhere, you know, gracefully sometimes in the middle. Sometimes it needs to be shoehorned in, for lack of a better term. But the idea that it's, you know, yes, it was developed out of a different need and maybe even a different era in cloud computing. That doesn't mean that it's not an effective tool. It just means that your thought process has to shift a little bit, which, you know, everybody needs to be a little more flexible nowadays and, you know, be willing to be more flexible faster, because that's the world we're living in. No one waits around for the perfect tool to show up to release their products. They release with, you know, what's available.
And this speaks to the direction then of CI/CD and Kubernetes, doesn't it? I mean, we're kind of going through the evolution right now, and we're seeing the kind of the maturity of these CI/CD environments. And if you're going to look at the current state of the market and then looking forward, what are some of the core issues that you want to address and build upon the success that Kubernetes has had?
I think for me, it's, I want to build systems that are, you know, of course, loosely coupled, but, you know, easier to use. You know, people say, oh, Kubernetes is complex and it's hard to use and it's hard to manage. Well, that's kind of fading into the background. That might have been the case 2-3 years ago, but it's getting easier, especially if you're using, you know, a cloud service offering. But even if you're using it internally, it's, you know, okay, you got a problem with the node. Well, shouldn't your node be somewhat ephemeral? I mean, unless it's the master, it should be easily replaceable. The idea of, you know, making IT and general technology easier to use is something that I've kind of built my life around, right? Like, technology should not make our lives harder. Choosing a specific technology should not change, you know, the way you do something very basic so drastically that it's harder to use as opposed to easier to use. I mean, that's the whole point of technology, right? Like, pacemakers exist to keep people alive. Kubernetes exists to speed up infrastructure changes and change systems more quickly. And I think it makes it actually easier to do that, you know, when you look at the overarching goal of what Kubernetes is here to do.
Eeyore, we're starting to see kind of interesting kind of developments that come with this evolution of Kubernetes. And you were talking about Git and how it really needs to, you know, these systems have to be native with Git. And we're starting to see the concepts emerge such as GitOps.
Right.
Maybe you could help our listeners here understand what GitOps intends to do.
So GitOps is pretty simple. It's probably one of the most simplest technologies and the most simplest concepts in this complex world. It's been originally developed and initiated by WeWorks, one of the major contributors to Kubernetes ecosystem. And the idea of GitOps is pretty simple. It's operations by pull request. So for you, as for an operator, the only thing that you should do at the final end is to submit a pull request to your Git system. With the single action, you can trigger some different actions that will trigger different actions and so on. It's pretty simple for almost any kind of developers and operators that are using Kubernetes today, and it doesn't require some extremely specialized, as we probably before the DevOps era, when we had the group of people that have been working on the operations and then were working on the operations full-time. We had a group of people that have been simply developing code. With the tools like GitOps and the similar tools, we can have the ability for the developers and for the people who are contributing to simplify their typical working time.
So that speaks to that GitOps story emerging. I'm curious on how those practices then end up affecting the tool development itself, Chris. Do you see that kind of the DevOps practices like something really that is manifested in what we see in GitOps? And do you see that affecting the tool development itself?
Potentially. I think the GitOps may be, you know, it's, to me, it's the holy grail of software and, you know, infrastructure management. It's, you know, I make this change and I push it and off it goes. And when I say off it goes, I mean, there's very little that you have to do to intervene between it, the code or infrastructure change going into, you know, customers' hands. It's a little new to say that it's changing the tooling quite yet. I think the premise of it has always been kind of in the background. Like, that's what people want. A lot of, you know, my life has been dedicated to, you know, making it possible to, you know, do that. And it's getting down to the point where it's going to become the standard. You know, I need to be able to hit Git push and, you know, it just handles the rest all on its own. And the it is irrelevant to some people, you know, whether it's, you know, Jenkins or Spinnaker or Kubernetes or, you know, magical fairies with unicorns running around. they really don't care as long as that Git push gets tested, gets checked for, you know, any kind of vulnerabilities or, you know, infrastructure changes that are, you know, unsafe, and then ends up in customers' hands within, you know, minutes, hours, you know, not, you know, oh yeah, we got to put it through change review and we got to do all these things and it's got to go, you know, you have to build the streaming jobs around it and all this other, you know, tooling has to come out of the Git push. GitOps, I think, to me, I think has been the underlying state of where we need to be for a while. The tooling that will emerge from what is now possible, I think, will be, you know, simpler, easier to use. Maybe you can tweak some things, but out of the box, it'll fit most use cases very easily.
So just looking ahead, we are seeing this shift. GitOps is a great representation of that, but we're also seeing the evolution of, you know, these resource, I call it resource-driven, you know, event automate, you know, event processes almost, right? Which is serverless essentially, right? Mm-hmm. You know, where we will see more deeply integration of serverless into the CNCF, into Kubernetes. And there's a lot of open source projects out there. You guys have now have a serverless working group focused on these efforts. What are the things that we're starting to see kind of with serverless affecting how we think about continuous integration, continuous delivery in Kubernetes?
So one of the biggest benefits of having, of using the serverless technologies is almost zero operation costs to use it. From the concept standpoint, it's really compared, it can be compared to GitOps Spartan, where you can simply trigger some action and something happens behind the scenes and you simply receive the desired result. Or undesired result, probably. But you can work with that. So again, the serverless technologies allow you, your organization, your team, and yourself to have almost zero extra operational charges. And if you are a developer, you can simply focus on developing the code and pushing one magic button, and everything will happen behind the scenes. And CI/CD systems that will be focused on serverless and are focused on serverless will globally satisfy this request, this demand.
How about the development of, you know, KubeCon in Copenhagen, we saw the emergence of this concept around operators, right? The concept of operators were essentially kind of a, if, you know, if I'm managing a very complex Java application or if I'm, you know, a database provider, the controller, you know, serves as almost like that Kubernetes control plane, right? Does that have any material impact on how we think about continuous integration, continuous delivery, you know, in the context of where we are today?
But it certainly provides a lot of that glue that we were talking about earlier, right? Like it definitely eases that transition or simplifies the management of those various services. I mean, that I see this happening very quickly, right? But the idea of all these operators coming out, you know, especially around KubeCon, the state that I want to be in is like these operators are just becoming the standard. You know, oh, we updated the MySQL version X. Well, here's the new operator for it. Oh, we released this new tool. Well, guess what? It comes out of the box with the Kubernetes operator of some sort, so that, you know, people don't have to figure out, oh, well, yeah, we got to use this, you know, latest version, but it doesn't have this Kubernetes operator. So now we got to retool this, you know, reconfigure all this stuff or retool some things. Now give us the operator out of the box and make that, you know, part of your, you know, development and release platform. That way that glue becomes, you know, Kubernetes primitive essentially, or, you know, you're talking, you know, SQL or Kubernetes. You're not talking this weird middle layer that you have to do to configure the two together.
Exactly. That seems to me speak for what's to come. We're going to see more of these declarative environments, such as, you know, these operators that will continue to kind of force us to think about how do we kind of look at the kind of overall Kubernetes infrastructure, you know, and thinking then about that raw data that's coming out of it and how you can better understand it through monitoring alerts and everything else.
The integration of operators into, you know, the environments that allow for a lot tighter and, you know, potentially faster changes to infrastructure and the underlying services themselves. And when I say services, I mean, like, if you have an operator for Kafka or your database or whatever, you'll be able to have those things running, you know, a lot smoother, I think. And the ability for you to accidentally put edge cases into your infrastructure kind of goes away or gets significantly diminished. The idea of speeding up development, I think, is a huge gain in some of these operators.
So just in conclusion, the CNCF role, your guys' role kind of in the evolution of CI/CD and Kubernetes, what is your mandate for the community?
It's a good question.
As an ambassador, I'm not here to say, use this tool, use that tool. I'm here to say, this is how you can use the CNCF tooling, you know, together and, you know, solve problems with it in your organization. But as far as mandates go, I don't think there's anything specifically saying, oh, well, we need, you know, some kind of, you know, blessed, perfect cloud native computing foundation solution to CI/CD. That's not why we're here.
Your job is to be the guide and testing the tools. You know, I could probably talk to you for an hour on how you got to go through the process of defining all these tools and their roles and how you assess them. But we can save that for another time. But that seems like a big part of your work, isn't it? The understanding the technologies out there and then providing people guidance about them.
It is not only guidance, but also provide the general understanding and sharing the knowledge with other people. So as Chris mentioned, CNCF and we all here are not pushing someone to do something, but we can strongly recommend and provide an advice why this technology is better for your specific use case compared to the different technology. Can be better for someone else for the different use case, because the second technology still exists in the market and still available, and for some reason some other people are using it. So I can't mention that technology A is better than technology B, because all these technologies have some value in this world. At the same time, if you are interested in which technologies are available today, which technologies you can use today, we at CNCF, we have developed the landscape. Yeah, so the cloud native landscape is the big database. Initially, we've started with the single image with the project logos, but during the really short period of time, we had all that page with the single image really crowded by this logo. So we have developed the interactive landscape where you can easily sort all these technologies. We are the categories and we are some different filters. And if you are interested in the group of technologies, for example, in the cloud native compatible systems and CI/CD, you can easily use it. So that's what we recommend from our side. We're not pushing someone to use this specific tool, but we can provide you the high-level guidance what happens in this market at all.
Well, wonderful. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us about CI/CD and Kubernetes from your perspective. We appreciate your support for the ebook. Look forward to seeing you soon in the coming months. There's lots happening in this world, and we'll be looking to you guys to for some guidance and just perspective. So thanks for your time.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Alex. Appreciate it.
You bet. Have a good day. Huge thank you to KubeCon plus CloudNativeCon, our sponsor for the ebook and podcast. KubeCon plus CloudNativeCon conferences gather adopters and technologists to further the education advancement of cloud-native computing. The vendor-neutral event featured domain experts and key maintainers behind popular projects like Kubernetes, Prometheus, gRPC, Envoy, OpenTracing, and more. KubeCon plus CloudNativeCon is a conference series under the Cloud Native Computing Foundation, a project of the Linux Foundation. Listen to more episodes of the New Stack Makers at thenewstack.io/podcasts. Please rate and review us on iTunes, like us on YouTube, and follow us on SoundCloud. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.